Hello, everyone. It's time once again for Catalog and Cocktails. It's your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data management with tasty beverages in our hands. I'm Tim Gasper, longtime data nerd, product guy, customer guy at Data.World, joined by co-host Juan Cicada.
Hey, Tim. I'm Juan Cicada, principal scientist at Data.World. And as always, it's a pleasure to spend middle of the week towards the end of your day and just chat about data. And I am super, super excited to finally have the one and only Scott Taylor, the Data Whisperer. If you don't know who Scott is, I think you've been living underneath a rock or something like that. But Scott, how are you doing finally?
I am wonderful, guys. Great to see both of you. Thrilled to be here with a tasty beverage and ready for it, ready for the show today.
All right. Well, I do want to start off. I want some quick shout outs because we've been seeing a lot of people kind of posting some stuff about things that have been happening in the podcasts out there. So Aureli Roland, thank you so much for listening to our podcast and writing some really interesting positions about data product ownership. We had our previous guest, Evan Ahari, who also wrote some really cool posts on her Substack. Jenna Jordan also was posting some stuff around it. So thank you so much. We really, really are so appreciative of all our podcast listeners and who follow just all our content around that. I mean, you're one of the reasons why we do this. I also want to do a shout out one of our former guests, Wendy Turner Williams. If you've been following her, she is an amazing data leader. She's been going through some tough times, and I reached out to Wendy saying, hey, let's give a shout out to Wendy so people know, hey, Go see Wendy and go. Let's support our folks in our community. So
it's all about
Wendy,
the data community.
All about the data community. So Wendy, we're all thinking about you. So let's go support our community. And with that, what are we drinking? What do we go toast for, Scott?
Am I starting? We're starting with a toast.
Yeah, you start.
Here's to better data. Always better data and peace, and not necessarily in that order, but here's to better data.
Cheers to that.
Cheers. And what are you drinking?
I just have a Corona Premier in this little slender can in a lovely little cozy brought to me by Alterex. Hopefully that's not them. Nice little shout out for them. Thanks for the swag.
But this that's actually a really nice looking cozy. It's like tall and skinny.
Yeah, it is. Fits right in there. Fits your those slim back. I've got a spare depending on how long we go. So we'll see what happens here.
Well prepared man.
Yeah, with the big fish, as you can tell, the big fish.
Yeah, I know. That kind of reminds me of, you know, there's those talking fish where it'll turn its head or whatever, but that one looks like it's static. It's not going to turn, right?
Yeah, it does not turn, but it has a light. The guy lit it. I'm in an Airbnb here. And today is World Storytelling Day. So here's to all you storytellers out there. Keep it going. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But yes, in fact, it is World Storytelling Day today.
I love that. I'm going to cheers to World Storytelling Day. And the drink that I'm drinking actually is a gin elderflower daiquiri. So it's got some of this Hendrix Floradora in it. So I've got some of that. It's kind of a very floral flavor. So you got to pick what it goes with. But it goes really well with elderflower. So that's my drink today.
And I'm having a cucumber vodka. It's actually with Effin vodka, which is cucumber flavored. And I actually have some really nice cucumbers in it. So for those who are looking, watching the video, you can see all my nice cucumbers.
That is a very nice presentation.
You're on like over 200 podcasts, right? Have you ever had the same drink twice? I know you guys always have these very sophisticated.
Sadly, we have to say yes.
I'm just wondering if you've ever.
No, sometimes we get a bit lazy or like last minute because, as people know, like we record this live. Yeah. Like we, I think it's 95% of the time we've been able to do this Wednesdays at 4 p.m. Central.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's like really quick, and then we're like, oh.
When we do have a cocktail, we try to mix it up as much as we can. Although I think that both Juan and I have done repeats on old fashions because that's like the go-to.
But.
Well, it's impressive. I just wanted to know, it's impressive. Your potable range is very impressive. Thank you.
All right, so warm-up question. What's your favorite saying?
A favorite saying I have, I learned it from my father, who is one of the greatest storytellers and greatest salespeople of all time. And he told me, when you get the yes, shut up. Shut up. So doesn't mean you have to stop talking, but it doesn't mean you have to stop trying to convince somebody of what you're trying to convince them of. And I learned it the hard way because I had this sales call, my background sales, obviously. And I blew it. I lost the sale because I was talking to this person and I said something along the lines of, okay, she said yes. And I said, that's great. It's going to be the same as last year. And she said something along the lines of, well, I didn't like last year. We're going to have to think about this some more. And the whole thing just kind of like just evaporated in front of me. I go back and I was working for my father at the time. And I tell him this and he's like, son, when you get the yes, shut up.
That's some good advice. That's good advice. I feel like a very similar thing is like, don't sell past the sale, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's a very, that's a definitely another way to put it. Yeah, and you know, those of us out there trying to, again, convince people of the benefits of what we have to offer. Why is what we're representing or talking about going to bring business value? That's what we all have to try and do in the data space. We're always talking to these folks in the business side, trying to get them to engage, get them to support what we're doing, get them to align what we're trying to do, understand their challenges and whatever. But people tend to over talk past the sale, past the point. You made the point, keep moving forward.
Yeah. That was something that my PhD advisor told me. We started a company together and that was one of his first kind of sales advice for me is like, they agreed, shake your hand and then shut up, probably even leave and let's go. So that's
it. The other one my dad told me was the sale isn't closed till the check clears.
That's another one. Yep. Tim, how about you?
Cheers to my father.
Yeah, cheers. The one that I'll say is actually, you know, I always think about how do you keep a clear head? How do you handle the challenges of the day, of work or anything with a clear mind? And so the saying I'm going to actually pick from my role model, maybe not so much, Frank Costanza from Seinfeld, when he said, "Serenity now,
insanity later." That's how the saying goes. Well, I've got so many. I'll probably go to a little bit more philosophical. But one is like, those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. I think that's one that I'm constantly always reminded about. And also one of my favorite ones, don't boil the ocean. And actually one that always comes to mind, and just because we really love Sanjeev Mohan. So shout out to Sanjeev. Yeah. A funny guy. He has some little quirky things he comes up with. I never met a data I didn't like.
I never met a data, yes. I don't know if he came up with that one, by the way. But
we'll
give him credit for it.
Well, that's where I heard him from. All right. Let's kick this off.
I never met a data I didn't like. Yes.
All right. Honest, no BS. Truth before meaning. What do you mean by that?
That is how I boil down my entire data philosophy down to three words. I couldn't get it any smaller than that. Truth before meaning. Determine the truth in your data before you derive meaning from it. So that determining the truth part, master data, reference data, MDM, RDM, PIM, RIM, DAM, all those foundational activities that we all know have to be done to build that data foundation before you start to derive meaning out of it through analytics, AI, BI, whatever you want to call it these days. And it's not chicken or egg here. It is egg and omelet. If you do not have the truth in your data, you are not going to get the meaning you want out of it. Obviously, I'm on the truth team, hence the meaning of my truth hat here. But for me, that is my data philosophy. And it's also an example of my work in terms of helping people talk about data in a business accessible way. An exercise I go through often is, what's the fewest number of words you can use to express your point? And so truth before meaning. It was a lot longer when I started, but I got right down to it.
You bumper found a stickers, way to make it
talking bumper stickers, yeah.
Both concise and compelling. That is a very interesting way to say it. So is kind of the fundamental idea here, you know, garbage in, garbage out. So you gotta address the front part of this equation.
So we learned that on the first day of data, right? GIGO. Unfortunately, that doesn't resonate enough because it is as fundamental. It's the laws of physics. It's like gravity, right? What goes up must come down. What goes in must come out. And what you put into something is going to have an effect on what comes out of it. And for some reason, people in the data space keep rediscovering that. with the latest, greatest thing. So Gen AI, you know, that needs very well-governed data going into it. Otherwise, those LLMs are going to hallucinate. It's like, okay, thank you for, you know, duh. It's the same thing. But for some reason, we have to continue to pound on that. And GIGO is basically all I ever riff on. That's my whole space, is reminding people of that in different ways so we get this message through.
Go ahead, Juan. Go.
Well, again, going back to my saying, it's about history, right? Like, oh, we need to have well-governed data for AI. And well, like, no shit, Sherlock, tell me something new. But why do we go back? Like, why do we have to continue to tell this kind of obvious message? I mean, this is also a theme that I see here a lot on the podcast. A lot of folks who come to the podcast, like, we have this conversation, and like, this kind of seems obvious, but we're still in business ourselves talking about this stuff because apparently it isn't. Why isn't this that seems obvious? It's not obvious.
I wish I had an easy answer, but because my whole life's work has been around this conundrum that we keep facing in the data space. But it's similar that, you know, everybody knows if you want to be healthy, you got to eat right and exercise. But we don't all do that, do we? You know, buy a Peloton and it's a great place to hang your clothes, or no, I'm have that snack or whatever. We always sort of cheat a little bit. So there's something around that that people still don't adhere to. And also the stuff that gets the most attention is the super sexy stuff. You know, data stewardship is boring. Data governance is like, oh, really? You know, do I have to go through that? I mean, these are not the sexy parts of the data space, unfortunately. And that's why I felt, and that's part of what inspired me in my work, was like, okay, we need another, you know, I want to be a loud voice out there, even though I'm the data whisperer. Spoiler alert, I don't do a lot of whispering, in case you haven't noticed yet. But we've got to be able to kind of, you know, shout and sell and tell and yell about the power and value of data management while all this other cool, sexy stuff gets a disproportionate amount of attention and interest and sizzle and, frankly, funding and support, when we know that none of it works. It's just a law of physics. None of that stuff works without doing the hard work beforehand. It just doesn't happen.
What things would you say fall into the truth bucket versus things that fall into the meaning bucket? Whether you're talking about practices or technologies, you know, interpret that however you will.
So I kind of bifurcate the space. Good question. Into these two sort of, you know, for the sake of simplicity, these two giant buckets: truth versus meaning, data management versus business intelligence. You know, data actually versus analytics is kind of like at the phylum level, if you will. But those foundational activities: master data, reference data, metadata, data governance, data stewardship, data quality, data management, RDM, you know, PIM, RIM, DAM, versus analytics, AI, BI, data science, data visualization. And frankly, most forms of data storytelling are really about analytics. I wish it had been called analytics storytelling, because that's really what it is. And that's part of what inspired me to do my book, Telling Your Data Story. Oh, just happen to have a copy of it here. Telling Your Data Story, Data Storytelling for Data Management, says right on the cover, 99% buzzword free.
Wait, what's the 1%?
I did not want to overpromise, so I left a little gap there.
That's no BS
right there. It's no BS. So, you know, data, and I felt every enterprise has a story to tell about why managing data is of strategic importance to their company. And data management folks that I dealt with my entire career had this kind of dual emotional state. They were really passionate and focused and determined about what data management, you know, again, that high level heading, data catalogs are in that, you know, all that foundational stuff, what data management could bring to their organization. But they were really frustrated because people didn't listen to them. You know, let's set a data standard. That sounds like it's fun. You want a clear room of stakeholders, start talking about how we're going to go on a data hygiene program. You know, they'll go running for the door. These things don't have...
Hey, we've got a data janitorial initiative. Who's ready? Who's excited?
Yeah, come on in. We're going to teach you how to spell street the same way twice. These are not business building kind of value added stuff. But luckily for corporations that are good at data, those folks are there. So I really felt like, okay, let me help by bringing a voice to that community, give them some techniques, give them some frame, and let them see somebody out there just, you know, as loud and as crazy as possible as the analytics side is. And there's a lot, you know, again, data storytelling, there's like 30 books, some about from great friends of mine around how to put analytics in a business context to drive action. There's a book out there about why you should put together a business accessible narrative for the value of data management. You know, how do you sell in data management to your CEO? You don't talk about, you actually don't talk about anything about how. That's one of my other kind of headlines is like,
oh, that's interesting.
You know, you got to focus. I focus, and that's my space. I focus on the why, not the how. Why it's important, not how it gets done. And another problem will probably answer your original question one throughout this whole show here. Data people love to talk about how they do stuff. They love to talk about all the things they did to try and get to the point where they really were successful. Look at this and look at this. And business people could care less. They don't care. I never met a CEO who cares how something is going to get done until they understand why it's important for their organization. And I've spent more than my share of time in front of senior leaders, even at, you know, classically, like at the cocktail party situation. Again, I came from Nielsen. I came from Dun & Bradstreet. I came from these service providers, and I talked to every kind of enterprise at every category, at every level of maturity all over the world. That kind of limits my scope. And so you have to get pithy. You got to get right to it. And, you know, so how do you explain it in a way that, frankly, you got to take people from in this journey from, I have no idea what you're talking about, to, gosh, how do we live without this?
Yeah.
And you got to bring them along.
I love the way that you're positioning this and the right way to sell it. I want to unpack a little bit more of the selling piece in a second. But before I do that, one thing that astounds me, and I'm sure you face this a lot, right, in the folks that you talk with. I know that we certainly face it in the catalog space, right, is I hear all the time folks say, oh, catalog, master data management, even things like reference data management, they say, oh, well, we're still building out our data lake or something like that. We're not ready for that yet. We will be soon. And I go, woo, like, wait a second. Like, aren't those things foundational? I'm curious if you have any thoughts around that or how you deal with that.
Yeah, we don't want to focus on the food and the ingredients. We just want the meal. And we're setting the table for the meal. We don't want nobody's cooking anything. You know, it's some sort of analogy like that. So the place you're going to put this data, if that's what you're focusing on first, odds are pretty good that the data that's going to go into that is going to suck. And at some point, it's going to come to a head. And you're just delaying it. So it, you know, data lake, data warehouse, data lake house. Isn't that where my data goes on vacation? These things are just this technology, whatever's happening lately. It doesn't focus on the content itself. And the quality of that content, the dependability of content, the truth, the trust, the reliability. Nobody disagrees that they don't want that stuff. It's just the hard work. Again, we'd all like to be fit and, you know, lose 10 pounds and look better and got to do the work. Magic button, panacea, easy, you know, magic wand solution here. They're just
we got our t-shirt now, Data Lakehouse. Isn't that where my data goes on vacation?
There you go.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right.
Some people probably steal that line from me.
I'm going to text Sanjeev to join us live right here. Okay, so this is LinkedIn. Oh, LinkedIn user. No, LinkedIn, actually Ramona. I can see her here. Hello, Ramona. It's not just data people. It's tech people. Abstracting away is not a strong suit. And so I want to unpack this a little bit because everything that you're saying right now, like who should be talking about more on the why, not the how. Is this, do tech people, the data people, they need to upskill themselves around this? Do they need to bring in a colleague, a champion around this? Do they need to hire around this? And so I'm curious what your thoughts are on this. And I just want to bring up last week at Gartner, I was talking to a former guest, Kristen Kim, and she's at Post. And she was telling us that she actually has a position of a mix of like a ENT education and training, but also like marketing. And it's like, we need to educate people about all this stuff we're doing with our data, how they can use it. But we also need to be able to celebrate our wins and celebrate what we're doing. And I need somebody to be able to go tell that story. So they actually have this position. I found that exceptional. I'm like, how many people are doing this? They actually have like their background is in marketing, this person. I thought that was a fantastic idea. So my question to you is it the data people, tech people need to upskill themselves, or should we just actually be hiring that this should be part of your team?
That's the first I've heard of that kind of position. That's great. I'd love to follow up and find out who that is, because that's, you know, it is marketing your capabilities internally. That's what my whole book is about, putting that story, that marketing internal marketing program together to educate and get more stakeholder engagement, to get funding for the work you're trying to do. If you're a data leader of any sort, you know, CDO on down, and you have aspirations to be a leader, then you got to be able to communicate. And that's all we're talking about here at its essence. Can you communicate to folks? And I feel like all of, you know, everybody in the data space could get better at communicating at one level or another. So like to say, you know, the soft skills are really hard, and our discipline is built on hard skills. Programming, analysis, data governance, you know, these are hard skills that you've got to be able to master to be effective. And then when you look at marketing folks, they're mostly soft skills, right? Storytelling, imagination, creativity. Not that we're not imaginative and creative in the data space, but just the where it comes from is from a different area. And I counsel data leaders, if you're going up for funding, which again, it's like, you know, it's all about the money. How do we get the money? How do we get the support? And you're a CDO and you're explaining your data program and the investments you're looking for, and you're up against the CMO and the chief sales officer, those two roles are based on storytelling. You know, marketers know how to spin a tale and put, you know, positioning together and convey the message that they're looking for. Salespeople, if they can't tell a story, they don't make quota. It's just bottom line. So you're up against people who inherently are better storytellers than you as part of their position. So if this makes anybody feel edgy and nervous and wondering if they have enough skills in the audience, good. You should feel uncomfortable about it because you should get better at it. And if you want to be a leader, no matter what, you got to be able to communicate. And so for me, who doesn't do better if they can communicate better?
This is the honest, no BS take. And I really appreciate how you're being very explicit about this, because people need to feel uncomfortable about this. People need to realize that they're not doing a good enough job. And I mean, basically the message here is if you consider yourself a data leader, but you are complaining that you're not getting the support you need, it's your fault.
Great. I agree. Because every company can do better with their data, and every company's data can help that company do better. And the opportunity we have in the data space is we provide horizontal value across a company. And you know, give me another department that can do that. So we can, you know, we touch finance, we touch operations, we touch sales, we touch marketing, we touch executive level, we touch every single part of the company can do better if they have the right data in the right place at the right time with the right kind of, you know, analysis around it and can operationalize it. So we have this tremendous horizontal opportunity across all those different silos. And so there's no excuse.
Yeah.
And if you can't explain it, it's your fault. It's not that you don't have the opportunities.
One thing I think
anybody at an enterprise level, and I deal at the you guys deal a lot with enterprises. There's exceptions here or there, but enterprises, the nature of an enterprise is that it wants to scale. It has multiple silos. It may have grown by acquisition. It has disparate kinds of sources. The go-to-market is complicated depending on the category. It might be global. It might be local. You know, these dynamics are in every type of enterprise, and data can help. You know, and when I say data there, I mean the whole thing, right? Data, analytics, BI, AI, all the rest of it. It can help the whole company. And the transformational things that we see out there come from that data, or come from data. Data, hardware, software, data, right? Those three things in terms of technology for an organization.
Yeah, well said. I think one thing that hurts data people and data organizations and data leaders is this sort of lingering perspective that data is IT. Because then what that does is it puts you in that mindset, right? Of like, oh, I'm a data person or I'm a data leader or something like that, right? And what's our function? Well, when you think of IT, you think of like, oh, well, you know, my phone is broken. Well, I need to go to IT and they're going to help me fix my phone, right? Or, we need a SharePoint site or something like that to host our wiki, right? Like, oh, well, they're not going to fill out the wiki. They're just going to manage the SharePoint site. It's an enabling technology, right? But data is not like that. It's not just an enabling technology. It's integrated. It's horizontal. It's vertical. It's centralized. It's decentralized, right? I think that's confusing for a lot of people, and makes them move away from some of those softer skills or that storytelling that they need to get good at.
I think breaking away from IT, which has happened, you know, that's certainly a dynamic I've seen since I go back to pre-2K in the data space. So I've seen kind of, you know, when it was just IT,
purely
and it was IT, yeah. Because like, data's in the computers and those folks handle the computers. But if there's, you know, if you think about it, one of the biggest misnomers at the C-level is the chief information officer, that I, right? It's not really, it became more technology officer. And so pulling data out of just strictly IT, I think there are, you know, there's plenty of data out there proving that that helps people get better value out of it. Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting comment here. Do you think parenting helps to conceptualize? Parents are experts at explain it to me like I'm five.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. I mean, parenting. Yeah. Okay. I think, you know, ask your kids. I guess so.
Well, I got a...
Is that a lightning round question? Yes.
Parents out there, you've had to get better at storytelling. It's just a different kind of story.
Yeah, you got to manage priorities. You got to be able to get people right, you know, get to the point.
Okay, so one of the things we were talking before, these the three V's, right? Not the three V's of big data, but the
my three V's of data storytelling for data management. Yes, with a knowing link to the three V's of big data, coined by one of my favorite guys in the data space, Doug Laney. And you watch that too. I talked to him. First time I had dinner with him, we were just joking about like how many V's are there now? 42 V's. People just started adding. Was there ever a construct anywhere where you could only describe it with words that began with a certain letter? That just never happened. But if you look at it in the data, people just went crazy, right? It was like, oh, what about value? What about, you know, viscosity? What about, it's just like went way off the deep end. So mirroring at least the original three V's, volume, velocity, variety, mine are vocabulary, voice, and vision. And this is a framework that I have in the book that I do a lot of talks on, but just a simple approach for people to get their thoughts in order. How do I start to organize it? So you start at the bottom, vocabulary. The words you use are important. Stay away from the buzzwords. Stay away from the technical terminology. Use the language of your business to talk to your business. How hard is that to figure out? But people need to be reminded of that. So make sure you use the kinds of words that your audience already understands. Voice, how does this thing sound? What's your tone and tenor? What's your positioning? Does your whole department, do they all get it? Can they all say it the same way? You know, what kind of metaphors are you using? What kind of similes are you? You know, these kind of figures of speech are really important. Good metaphors, good similes, good figures of speech shorten the distance to understanding. Bad ones confuse you. My favorite bad one is data's the new oil. What do we mean by that? Right? I mean, luckily that has gone down, but there were you know, that had its run for a while, and it was infuriating, especially watching people on LinkedIn debate, well, it's like oil because it needs to be refined. No, it's not like oil because it's got to be, you know, it's not sustainable. And you just go, that proves my point. The fact that we don't have a clear understanding of what data is the new oil means it's a it's terrible poetry. Like, stop. So that's been gone. My name of my keynote, though, is data is the new bullshit, which people kind of get right away. So get the words right, get the tone right, and then the most important one is vision. The third one, vision. Everything you do with data should enable the strategic intentions of your enterprise. Where is your company trying to go, and why does data help you get there? It is not about what you think the use case is. It is about where, again, to my point of horizontal value, where's your company trying to go? And if you don't know that, go find out, because your company has a direction, it has a strategy, it has intentions that you need to understand deeply in the data space so you can show how data is going to help. That's how you get into the CEO's office. You go up and you say, see this five things you wrote in the annual report? Three of them mentioned customer, and our customer data sucks. Two of them mentioned brand, and we can't, you know, our brand hierarchies are a mess. You know, these are these foundational things. We're not talking about analytics. We're talking about data management here. And every business is trying to bring value to their relationships through their brands at scale. That's how I kind of sum up. That's my definition of digital transformation, if you will. Every business has relationships. Every business has brands. How is your data about those two types of entities? Because if that isn't right, you're not going to get the scale. You're not going to be able to fulfill those kind of initiatives. One thing for sure your CEO's not talking about is better data quality. They're not talking about that. And when you talk about data quality, most people sound like they start whining. It's like, you know, our data quality is really bad. We got all these duplicates in the hierarchy. And it's just like, shut up. Who cares? And frankly, they'll go, why? Why is data quality important? You better answer that question before you even talk. You know, you need to know the answer to that question, because the answer to that question is the reason you're in that office. So,
thank you so much for this right
this
now.
Is this helping.
And this is actually, Malcolm Hucker brings this up all the time too. It's like, it is embarrassing with me saying all these things about data quality. Like, that's not the way to go talk about this. And I think that you nailed it right there. Like, oh, I don't care about this stuff. Like, I'm gonna poor you. Like, no, you got to tie it directly to how this company is making money and saving money directly. So this is so.
That's smart. It. Malcolm and I, if you don't know our history, we were brothers together at Dun & Bradstreet, and we literally traveled the world doing a roadshow on D&B. And I was the why, and he was the how. And he's just blossomed into this huge I saw him at Gartner, and it was like, I have one word for you, my friend, gravitas. He's just like nails it on stage. I'm so proud of him. But so we became fast friends because we philosophically, we have the same, but he can talk the how stuff. He can talk the tech stuff like nobody. And we'd be in meetings and literally he would go, okay, Scott, we're going to lose you here for a minute, but I'm going to talk to these IT people. And they were like, wah, 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 wah. And I just wait till he's done. And then I get back into like a normal conversation, but he can talk it all.
Well, this is a good, everybody's listening. Like, just go back to, I don't know what episode it was, but Malcolm has been on the podcast for sure. So, I do remember Malcolm's podcast last year was actually the most popular one. I remember that.
Oh, nice. Good for him.
Is MDM dead? I think. That was a question. Anyways, and also just call out here, John McKee says, hey, you're pretty good at this. I think you should speak about data for a living. Just FYI.
Thank you. I appreciate the career advice, John. How did I not? My question to John is, how did I not find him at Gartner? I mean, how did I not see him? How did I not see him there? So I did find at Gartner, this guy.
Yeah. So, okay. Ooh. There's another thing. What the heck are these data puppets? Because I'm... Ooh. Tell us more. And that seems like a little owl.
What's this guy? What's his name? What's this guy's name? This is your
Sparkle.
Owl. Sparkle, the owl. Sparkle, unfortunately, I came by your booth because I had my Antelis from Gardner who was doing interviews and interviewed 20 different. As Dremio, we had a bunch of different. I interviewed everybody who had a little toy. And I kept coming back, Juan, and you were deeply engaged in, you know, value-based conversation, so I did not want to interrupt you. But I do data puppets. If you don't know what they are, Google the term data puppets. You will find only my stuff. It's like an SEO marketer's dream. It's 100% organic reach here. Google has never seen the words data and puppets together before, so I lucked into that one. But I have my anchored by my star here, the CDO, the chief dog officer, the ITB who speaks only in buzzwords. They hire a cat sultant from Meow Kinsey. And I have this whole series I've been working on. You can find, I've got a preview. Tim, I know you saw that today. A preview of a multi-part series called Journey to the Center of the Single Version of the Truth, the greatest data story ever told. And it follows the adventures of the CDO and the ITB, and they wander off and make every possible mistake. And I did these puppets a couple years ago. I did one of them. And it was just, it was called Too Much Tech Talk. And it was just like joke after joke after joke. The bee and the and this monkey from the business called Monkey Business and the dog, and they were struggling to try and explain like SQL and Spark, and I had all this ridiculous language in there. And the reaction I got was just overwhelming. People were like, I just left this meeting. This is just like my company. How did you know this? This is so funny, but this is so true. And I'm like, you know, these are puppets. You realize that, don't you? So inspired by that, I've extended it off into a couple different areas. One, doing this massive, it's creatively, it's some of the wildest work I've ever done. And it's a ton of work. I'm not complaining at all, but it's so fun. And so I've got this series coming out sometime in the later in the year. I've been working on it for a while. I have kind of a Simpsons-like casting approach. So I have Malcolm's in it, and he plays an Antilist from Gardner. Kate Strachey's in it. She plays the CEO, the chief elephant officer. There's a mouse who's the CMO. There's a CFO's a fish. It's like, how am I the only one to ever think of this? I've never thought of this. Nobody else has done this whole, like, you know, animal through the sea level. So I've established that whole conceit. And they have a bunch of, review a bunch of software. So Sanjeev plays Salesfork. Or no, he plays Microspoon. And I have somebody else play Salesfork.
That was Sanjeev?
Yeah, Sanjeev plays Microspoon. Yeah,
I broke down laughing when I saw that part of the trailer. I didn't realize that was Sanjeev.
And then the knife comes out as ChopGPT. So that's, you know, for me, this stuff just comes out of me. And then I went to a Salesforce conference, and it just struck me. I wasn't prepared. So I spontaneously decided, okay, I'm going to go do these interviews with these little stuffed animals, because all these people were giving away these stuffed animals. And so I couldn't find a fork, so I found a spoon. And at the end, he's like, he gets kicked out of the conference, and they're like, you can't be in here because you're not a fork. And he's like, well, I'm a spoon, but I identify as a fork. That was going on. And he's a runcible spoon. So I went around and interviewed all these folks, and it was a blast. And so I did it at Gartner. I did 20 interviews with all these little, with this antilist. And he gets kicked out by the Gartner whale at the end. So I've decided that's a motif, that every time my character gets kicked out of the conference, it goes, no, I'm really an antilist. Look me up. My name is Andrew White. You know, Andrew.
Yeah.
I wrote The Seven Circles of MDM Hell. Look it up. It's a classic. It's like, no, get out of here. You'll see that. I'm just riffing on this. But that's coming. So more data puppets are coming. I love it. It's so much fun. It's so much work, but
don't you have to have like a swan and a dolphin too? Because we're the Gartner swan and dolphin.
Yeah, there was a dolphin something. I didn't have a swan. I also did an actual. I'm commercializing this, so any of the brands out there who want to work with me and create puppet content to break through the clutter, I did one for DataBand, IBM brand DataBand. So I was, and again, sort of the creative challenges. How do you use a really analog form of storytelling to explain a very digital situation? So I had to explain data observability very quickly with these characters. And the dog and the bee are kind of arguing about it. And then the hero that comes in is this raccoon who's played by the brand, by the CMO of DataBand, a guy named Brian Yackel. So, and he wants, and there's a band. We actually created like a little band that plays music every time there's a data problem. and they and there's these pipes with ping pong balls that represent data. And look it up. It's on the internet. It's on YouTube. It's on my LinkedIn profile. But check out the data band. Forget what it's called. Strike up the data band. It's what we called it. So simple nice. Stuff, funny stuff, and you know, a little bit of Muppets, a little bit of Triumph, the insult dog, but just apply it all to data. We got plenty of room in the space. So
I love this. It's so good. For everybody who's listening, you gotta Google Data Puppets. Check out the trailer. It is so hilarious. You know, this is a perfect medium to not just have a laugh, but also surface a little truth and meaning around data.
No, thank you so much. This was, I will say, this is the funniest episode we've ever done.
All right, that's what I'm looking for. My partner's applauding over there. Lovely, the brilliant, the sexy Marianne, the data whisperer. We all got to have our own whisperer there. She calms me down.
So not only the funniest, but the funniest, and I think one of the best, honest, no BS truths coming out there. So,
okay. Thank you. All right, cool.
Exactly what we need.
I earned a shirt. I want one of your shirts.
Yes, we need to get the shirts back. We got.
We're gonna open. I just ordered another batch, so we'll make sure.
We need to start a t-shirt business, Tim. I don't know. One day you do it. You do puppets. Tim and I want to do t-shirts.
We've been talking about t-shirts for so long now. Now, like, I feel like we have to never make t-shirts because you know, the joke must continue.
Somebody else will do it, right? So, anyways, let's go to our lightning round questions because I'm sure we're going to continue this this banter here. All right, number one, we talked about truth and meaning. Is AI part of meaning or both?
Part of meaning.
Oh, that was a very serious answer. I thought you were going to.
Yeah, well, it's just straight. That's it. That's it.
All right, perfect.
Yeah. You put bad data into AI, you get AS, artificial stupidity.
Yes. All right. Second question. Governance traditionally has been, you know, more kind of defensive and regulatory oriented, right? Like the police, right? I'm seeing some companies start to call it data enablement and make some shifts there, or data governance and enablement. Do you feel like the phrase data governance ultimately is doomed?
No, I mean, it's a discipline that's going to be there. You could dress it up and call it enablement. I find the word enablement a little squishy. And you know, does that really focus on the grunt work that's got to get done to fix the data? Or is it more about helping people use the data? I don't know. And my challenge with some of these new terms is kind of explaining them to everybody and then getting to, you know, internalize it and then working on it. And it's just like, by then the meeting's, you know, half done. So do we need to come up with a new way to talk about the stuff we've always dealt with? Sometimes you want to brush it up, but I just feel like there's maybe a little too much effort in there, in that world, trying to just
push it into telling the value story, the why.
Yeah. You know, I mean, a good example, again, I don't mind picking on them because I was at the Gartner conference, right? We're at the keynote, and the first thing was like, you know, collective intelligence. Right. I mean, Gartner's where buzzwords are born. That's where that's like the black hole that just births out new buzzwords. And you just go, okay, yeah. First of all, John Thompson told me afterwards that he actually coined that like a while ago, and I give him props for it. But just regardless of the term, do you think anybody's going to go back from that conference and then go to their business leaders and say, you know what we need to do is work on collective intelligence and here's what it is and here's 19 slides. And it's like, are you really doing the work?
But how many people actually do that? How many people are actually doing that?
Hopefully no, but AI Radar, did you catch that one?
I didn't catch that one. What was that one?
That was another one they put up. I mean, this goes, I collect these. Nexus of Forces, that was a couple years ago. Technocracy, that was a good one.
Technocracy, that sounds kind of interesting.
Technocracy, like, I think it's like technology and democracy. I don't know what it is, but you come out of there like, okay, this is great. And then you walk into another room and you have to explain all this stuff and it's not even yours. And like, people are just, Did you get
that's
the
actually a good litmus test, right? If you had to explain that word, would you look like an idiot? If so, maybe it's not a good phrase.
Yeah, maybe it's not. Yeah, exactly. That's a good litmus test.
All right.
Don't look like an idiot, please. All right. Next question. Can we teach good data analytics storytelling?
Yes. You teach storytelling. Yes, absolutely. You learn it in, you know, I learned it in a natural story. I've been doing storytelling since it was two words. That's how long I go back. But yes, you can teach storytelling, teach, you know, and people tell stories all the time. And it's not unheard of to look at sort of consumer stories. Watch a great movie that you love. Why do you love that movie? Is it the special effects? No, it's the story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when people spend $100 million on a movie and it bombs, why does it bomb? Because the story isn't any good. I mean, it's just so important. So learning how to tell a story is super important for, yeah, again, everybody in life.
The special effects could be kind of lousy and you can fault it, but if the story was good, you probably still enjoyed the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Fourth question. Final question here. If we shifted, or any company shifted, 80% of their analytics people and budget to data management and foundation instead, would that be net good?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't even think you have to go 80%. Something. Get them at the table. Get them in the room. Get these data management people in the room because they're going to help you. You know, Andrew Ng, right? Great data scientist, huge thinker in the space, came out with a breakthrough statement last year. Right? Oh, it's not about the models. It's about the inputs. So my riff on it was like, data scientist discovers GIGO. There it is again. Anything that's not a new, this is not a new story. Oh, yeah. Shift something.
Love it.
That's right. She's reminding me of like hardware. It's the last page in my book. I'm going to give away the ending right here. Where is it? Data management work is never done. Business is never finished. Hardware comes and goes. Software comes and goes. Data remains. The end.
That's also one of my favorite books every year. These two. Software Wasteland by Dave McComb, and then The Data Centric Revolution. Right, and it's all about applications come and go. Your data is at the center.
Yeah, yeah. So we're all
doing this.
You know, as much focus as we could. We can't put enough focus on it because it's always an uphill battle.
Agreed.
It just is. So, and I think people who are really, truly, you know, love the data management side know that. Mm-hmm. You know, that's our challenge. You know, they're not talking about data, you know, they actually talk. What happens is people talk about it without talking about it. So if you watch, you know, CNBC and all these business leaders come on and they talk about AI and they talk about stuff, and then behind the scenes you realize, oh, somebody at some point goes, but the data that we focused on, put into these models, actually gave us the result.
Yeah.
What do you think about this one? Data is renewable energy.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, my breast. All right,
I'll take it.
Right.
Okay.
Just before we go to the takeaways, I'll express like one hope. My hope is that as AI really captures the attention of everybody, which it has, and I think that's just going to keep on amplifying and rolling forward, that it breaks some of the problem that we find ourselves in, that like we actually finally break the mold and say like, oh wow, the more we invest in our data foundation, the better the AI gets, in a way that maybe hasn't happened in the past, right? Where like, you know, because you know, people like you invest in your foundation like, oh, it makes it easier to do an analysis and things like that, but you can always lean on the analyst to say like, oh well, they'll interpret it, they'll do it for me, they'll do the hard work, right? But hopefully now with AI, we actually, I'm hoping it shifts the tides.
some people have asked me, so will AI, you know, will it replace data management? I say no, because somewhere at some point there is data management. Even if it's baked into the AI process, it still happens. It still happens. If you have more than one data source, you're going to need data management. So, and everybody's got more than one data source about everything. So it might be called something different. It might be put somewhere else. It might have different technology on top of it, but it still happens. It's like, again, back to the cooking analogy, which is my favorite set of analogies. If you want to describe data in any organization, use food if you can't think of anything else. If you make a meal, you didn't replace the need for ingredients. It's still there. So
you would really, I would love to get Scott and Kirsten together, because Kirsten also works in food and she had this food analogy. Like, just, we need to get like former guests together and all this stuff. But anyways,
it's a good one.
Takeaway time, Tim, take us through
the takeaways. Let's do some takeaways. So we started with honest, no BS. What does it mean? Truth before meaning. What is this data philosophy, which we're uncovering here, which the data whisperer has revealed to us? Well, it was that you said it's to determine the truth of the data. That is the foundation. And that has to happen before deriving analytics. Right. And we said, you know, the garbage in, garbage out needs to become goodness in, goodness out. I love that. G-I-G-O. Flip the G-I-G-O to the good kind.
Yes.
You said it's not a chicken and egg situation. Egg is the truth, and then you make an omelet, which I love it. So think of it differently. It's not like, oh, it's both parallel. No, the one helps the other, right? Fewest numbers of words to explain things is really important, and that's how you got kind of this truth before meaning. And, you know, what is truth, right? The truth is the foundational data management. It's the data, it's the master data management, it's the metadata management, the reference data management, the data integration, right? It's that which binds and identifies that truth, right? The meaning is the business intelligence, the analytics, the data science, the data visualization. Most forms of data storytelling is on the meaning side. And you mentioned in our lightning round that a lot of the AI stuff in terms of how people are trying to apply the AI really is more on this meaning side, right? It needs that truth. It needs that foundation to be effective. And when we talked about storytelling and data storytelling and analytics versus sort of the data foundation, you mentioned when trying to sell data management and truth to the business, focus on why, not on the how. So focus on the why. Data people like to talk about how they did stuff, the tech, and how they tied it together, and all the nerdy stuff that goes right over the, you know, CEO and COO and CFO's head, right? Focus on the why. Focus on the ROI, right? Like, you know, I'm ad-libbing a little bit here, right? But like, you know, we focus so much on the tech and not enough on the value. We should not, as an industry, be suffering in terms of figuring out what the value is of this work that we're doing on the data management side. It is incredibly valuable. And I thought what was really funny is we started to talk about, you know, data lakehouses and, you know, people investing in their data lakehouse before investing in their, you know, metadata management and things like that. And you said data lakehouse, isn't that where my data goes on vacation? T-shirt coming soon to a store near you. Juan, what about your takeaways?
That was super impressive, Tim. By the way, I made dinner. I didn't want to interrupt you. That was amazing. Really? That was nice. Yeah, right, hon? Wasn't that a good, really?
We're paying attention here.
Appreciate it. Well, that was just your appetizer. Juan, what are your takeaways?
Okay, sorry, Juan. I don't want to disturb the flow here.
You're good.
What if, like, this notion, what I called out here, like this data marketing. I brought up with former guest Kristen Kim from Post, who's like, they have this role of education and training and marketing. And you're saying like you've actually never heard about that, and you think that's great. And I think this is a, I'm seeing this now as like there's opportunity for not just innovation, but also innovation in the space in your teams. But it's a requirement because we need to communicate, right? You need stakeholder engagement. You need to drive funding for everything you're doing. If you want to be a leader, you and your team, you need to communicate. Everyone in data can do better at communicating. So if you're going up for funding and you are the CDO explaining your programs and your investment needs, and you're up against the chief marketing officer, the chief sales officer, well, you better be freaking good at storytelling, because they are. And if you aren't, you're screwed. So does this make you feel uncomfortable? Good. You need to get better at this. So if you're the one complaining that, oh, I can't get my funding, well, guess what? It's your problem. Go figure out how to go communicate better. If you can't explain it, it's your fault. Then we go to use other your other framework, the three V's, vocabulary, voice, and vision. Vocabulary, don't use weird words. Don't use buzzwords. Use the language of your business to talk to the business. Voice, how does this sound? Is everybody getting it? What metaphors are you using? How good are you at that telling part? Because the bad ones actually confuse people, like data is the new oil. And then finally, the vision. That data enables that strategic vision of your company. How are you thinking of data, and how is that going to help you get there? And if you don't know where that vision is or how where you need to go to, you need to find out. And that's the most important part. I like how you said every business has relationships and brands. How is your data doing with respect to those things? The CEO really doesn't care about better data quality. They care about, oh, we have issues. Our goal is to improve customers, and we have this issue about brands. Well, then let's talk about that. Let's talk about data quality. And then, oh man, data puppets. We need. I want to meet this chief dog officer, the ITB, the analyst, the journey to the center of the single version of the truth. Sounds like a novel I want to read tonight. You know, Scott, how did we do on our takeaways?
If you guys start doing puppets, you're going to put me out of business. So you nailed it all the way across the board.
No, we're going to do t-shirts. Really? We're going to do t-shirts. You do the puppets.
All right, yeah. Good. Just let's keep our spaces there. We can collaborate.
Stay in our lanes.
Yeah, you do the theater. We'll be the ones doing the merchandise at the end.
I get outside. The puppet guys. That's mine.
We'll bring the cocktails.
All right. There we go. All right.
Really, that was spectacular, both of you. I'm super impressed, especially since we've all been drinking.
Well, that was all you. It wasn't a whisper. It was a shout. It was a very
good. That was it. Well done.
I filled this up already, so this is not my first one. And the thing people don't know is, like, I always go to the gym. So in 5 minutes, I have to run out. I'm going to the gym after this. Anyways, let's wrap this up. Three questions. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? What resources do you follow?
My advice is, and I've already mentioned it already, learn how to tell a story. And I've told that to other people. Like, a data science student came up to me and was like, what do you think? I said, learn how to tell a story, no matter what. A lot of ways to do that, but learn that. It's a craft. It takes practice. I practice all the time, rehearse, all that kind of stuff. Learn how to tell a story. Who should you have on? Probably had a whole bunch of my friends, but I thought of this guy, Jake Sanders. He works for a company called Ninja Cat. He did one of the most enjoyable podcast interviews I ever had. This one is up there as well. But he comes from the marketing data space. And he also did kind of a rock opera, Hamilton-like musical called Big Data Day. So we discovered each other. Obviously, you know, super creative, music-oriented, writes about data. Tenkai Feng is another one. If you don't have him, he's like super creative. He did the music for my puppet show. He did the Governors of Data rap song. So those folks, both of them, I definitely put top of my list there, because you've had, you know, I'm sure you've had Malcolm and Kate and George and Sue, you know, all the data venture folks as well. And, you know, where do I learn? I'm going out there, talking to you guys, listen to other podcasts, went to Gartner last week. I'm going to Enterprise Data World next week. LinkedIn feeds, you know, I love to watch. I like to watch webinars from brands, and I like to watch like the first 5 minutes. Like, how do they set this up? Mm-hmm. What do they talk about? Do they have any kind of interesting twist to it? Because then they get into a demo or whatever, and I don't, you know, again, I don't look under the hood. But I like to hear kind of like how people set the stuff up. That's some advice too. Your first couple of minutes are probably the most important in terms of whether you're going to engage an audience or not. And mm-hmm. Think about that. Think about those precious few minutes you've got right up in the beginning. When I do my keynotes and I do my presentations on stage, I don't start with a bunch of rambling. Oh, how's everybody doing? And oh, here's me. I do what I call the cold open and just go right into it. And then I get to my other stuff, but it just grabs people's attention. So,
yeah. Is that your tip? Hook people at the beginning. Do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If you ever start a session with, I'm the last thing between you and lunch. I mean, I will be the one in the back of the room that just yells, then get out of the way. Really. Just, I'd rather have lunch and listen to somebody who doesn't think I'm worth listening to. Really.
Between
you and drinks and blah, blah, blah. It's just, you know, it's almost as bad as, you know, well, I looked up in ChatGPT what this meant, you know, which is the current version of it. Wikipedia says, which replaced, you know, according to Merriam-Webster, it's like these are lazy things. You got that first moment. Don't waste it.
Oh, thank you so much for it. I'm a whole anti like agenda. Let's go through this stuff. And actually, I love start that this cold opening is something people are not comfortable about. That it makes them feel uncomfortable.
They're not. No. The first time I did it, I was concerned. I was like, all right, I'm going to try something really new here. Because I did, they're like, oh, how's everybody doing? Oh, you know, and I just started with like a booming sentence. I have the, you know, I think it was like, everything we do turns to data, which is actually the first line of my book. Or free enterprise has a data story to tell. And just like, you know, my dramatic arts background helps with that. And you just see people just like sit up all of a sudden. Mm-hmm.
And the then phones you can go down and the eyeballs come up, right?
Yeah, here's my background and here's all this stuff and blah, blah, blah. But you just start that way and it's fairly, yeah, it is a little bit uncomfortable to start that way at first, but it works. It's beautiful.
Do you think it's part of good storytelling?
Do you think everybody should go to some like theater, acting, improv class?
Anything that gets you comfortable on your feet, talking to people you don't know. You know, I'm different. I'm wired differently. I like to say I have a fear of not public speaking, but most folks aren't like that. And again, I have dramatic arts training. I lean on that stuff every day. Get better at listen to yourself, record yourself, listen to it, get rid of your verbal tics, get rid of your wasted language, take the space. It's your space. It's your time. And people don't respond to folks who are wondering why they're there.
It's very wise. Scott, thank you so much for such a phenomenal conversation. This is a unique episode because we had fun. Not that we don't usually have fun, but we really laughed. And I'm like, I got tears here of just laughing.
Did my job today.
You went very profound, very wise. You have a practical advice to go to your day-to-day, but also practical advice for life. So thank you, Scott. I really, really appreciate this. This was fantastic.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure.
Just quick reminder, next week, Dim and I are going to be live from Data Council here in Austin, and we're going to try something different. Our next episode, we're just going to go off and we're going to sit in a corner at the conference and just anybody wants to come by, just come by and say hello. And we're going to interview anybody wants to be interviewed. One question. What's your honest, no BS take on the data world? That's with that, Scott, thank you so much. And as always, thanks to Data.World who lets us do this every week. So, cheers, everybody. Thanks,